Are you smarter than AI, artificial intelligence? It's your Tech Update Monday on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry today. And we're going to start by looking at artificial intelligence and how fast it is advancing. What are some of the concerns about it? What are some of the potentials that we could see as a result of it? And what are the questions you have about AI and other tech that you may be trying to figure out and get working the way it should? So, with that in mind, we have Beth D'Angelo returning to join us for this hour. Beth's worked in IT for more than 20 years. She's a senior IT specialist for UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. So what questions do you have for her about tech today? You can join our show by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email anytime. talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Beth, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
I am curious because artificial intelligence or AI seems to be advancing so rapidly that I'm just getting a handle on it before it seems to find a new iteration and a new version, which took place last week with the big AI company OpenAI releasing their latest iteration of their chatbot using AI called ChatGPT-5. Now, OpenAI launched its first iteration of GPT back in 2022, not so long ago to consider that we're already on version 5 today. But what does that look like and what does that mean for the advancement of this AI technology, Beth?
Yeah, you're right. It really does feel like we're kind of under the AI fire hose right Ooh. Now, where things are advancing so quickly that it's difficult to keep up with what those advancements look like and how to take advantage of those benefits, those features, and what to educate yourself about in order to make these tools useful and also maintain security conscious while using them.
Yeah, that security aspect certainly has to be a component that has been, I don't know, not part of the debate so far, at least in the mainstream as far as I've seen. But let's take a step back. And when we're talking about artificial intelligence, Beth, what does that mean? What is going into that chatbot machine?
Well, I think what most people are familiar with in what is referred to as AI today is the use of something called large language models, which are huge collections of data, whether those be pulled from library publications, common works, other databases that exist in academic institutions or other organizations, compiling large chunks of data, and then using techniques that have evolved through something called machine learning for creating systems which take this data and create predictive models for responding to prompts. So you put a prompt into an AI engine of any kind, and what you're expecting is a response from that AI engine. Where that response comes from is whatever data that AI engine is pulling from, and then also the algorithmic machine learning behind it that has taught the system how to teach itself, essentially.
So they're using large language models, gathering as much
Yes.
data that they can to process and then use machine learning to process that data in a way that when we ask for it, it's presented to us in a very human-like form, like a conversational,
Exactly.
engaging form. So how is this artificial intelligence chatbots that we see on the front end, how does that compare to, say, the search engines that most of us are used to?
Well, I think that's kind of how people are starting to use AI, at least dipping their foot or their toe in the water, is kind of approaching it as if it's, you know, a beefier Google, you know, where, you know, it's Google, but on steroids, essentially, where you're not just putting in a very simplified, maybe up to 5 or 6 word at most search string into a Google search, you're entering a prompt into a chatbot or an AI engine that contains a lot more detail. So you can be much more specific about what type of response you're looking for, and the modifications that you can make in order to, you know, kind of modify that response are really endless.
But Beth, the steroids might not be the only drugs that artificial intelligence are on, because one of the common themes we've seen so far with AI is hallucinations.
This is a great metaphor. Excellent. I love it. I love it, Lee.
Well,
you did an awesome segue.
It's just strange to me that, you know, when we'd get wrong answers now, we just say, well, the machine is hallucinating, not that the actual large language model being processed by machine learning is just wrong.
Yes, it's a fault in the code,
mm-hmm.
or it's a fault in the data.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that the folks I've worked with for many years, something we say frequently when we talk about systems is garbage in, garbage out.
Yes.
So that's something that we have to keep at front of mind when we're thinking about the systems that we're using for this type of response.
What are some of the different AI models that we can use or engage with right now online, Beth?
Well, I think some of the most popular types of AI models we've got, of course, ChatGPT is probably the most ubiquitous out there, or the most well-known. They were certainly kind of the first to break through in this larger global consumer market, and they do have a fairly powerful engine. But there's also other more specialized engines that aren't necessarily as general as a ChatGPT. There's one that's very up and coming called Claude,
mm-hmm.
That's more focused on creative aspects, so refining writing, refining artwork, using it to produce reference material for then going on to generate human-created works or pieces. So more specialized things. And then there's also image generation AI, where you can put in prompts to say, I'd like for you to create a cartoon drawing of, you know, of Lee Rayburn sitting at the microphone, hosting the Larry Mueller show in the style of, you know, pick your favorite cartoon artist, and it'll draw you a picture. So you feed it information, you give it parameters to generate a response within, and it feeds a response to you. And then you also feed into the system by telling it whether or not that was a good response.
Oh, interesting.
So then the machine learns that, okay, this person likes this type of response or doesn't like this type of response, or then starts to generate its own data about your preferences and how to respond to you.
Beth, are there things that AI can't do, or are there limits that we have seen to the artificial intelligence processing these large language models?
I'm waiting for one that can fold and put away my laundry, honestly.
You know, you make a great point, because you've got AI creating these arts, you've got AI creating music and songs, but we're left with all the mundane tasks that I think most of us were hoping AI would take care for us, so we could do the art and we could make the songs.
Exactly. We're looking to enhance our lives, not to take away from the things that we actually use our humanness to do. So, you know, I think where people can lean into these AI tools is to learn how to use them to kind of automate some of the mundane tasks that you don't want to do the busy work to get done. But if you can work a little bit smarter at the outset and set something up to manage some of those tedious tasks for you, then you can focus more on your own creative pursuits.
From an IT specialist perspective, Beth, why is it that AI seems to have started by tackling the artistic endeavors, the interesting things, and is yet to be able to control or take over our mundane tasks in life?
Well, I think the source material for, you know, what's out there in the commons on the internet as far as literature and imagery and I guess just artistic content is vast.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is openly scraped very easily by many of these AI, you know, software companies. to use to feed those large language or large image or large data models that they're using to power those engines. So I think low-hanging fruit is probably maybe part of the answer.
Interesting. The OpenAI company, which released their latest GPT-5 chatbot last Thursday, has a valuation right now, at least most recently, estimated to be between $300 and $500 billion. This could be a half-trillion-dollar company. But when they released ChatGPT-5 last week, their CEO, Sam Altman, said it's the biggest single step forward OpenAI has taken in worldwide accessibility and calls it a PhD-level expert. What have you seen from the new iteration of GPT from OpenAI so far, Beth?
Yeah, I've played around with it a bit. And so some of the claims that they're making with this new version are really based around more accuracy of responses and then the speed at which you will receive those responses. So it's not going to take as long to generate the content that you're looking for. And they're claiming a reduction of 45% in the likeliness of factual errors in the responses that it produces or that it generates. So that hallucination we were talking about a little while ago, they're hoping to kind of lower that happening. So really, I think what they're trying to do is to gain the trust of their users that the information that's being responded back from those systems is going to contain factually information or factually accurate information. And that's been one of the pitfalls so far with a lot of these AI engines is that kind of, quote, hallucination.
Well, this goes back to my original question. Are you smarter than artificial intelligence? And in some ways, you actually are. One of the reviews I saw of GPT-5 from PC Magazine asked the new iteration of ChatGPT to count the number of R's in the R letters in strawberry. It's become a rather common litmus test for logic skills for these large language models. The answer is 3, but ChatGPT often says 2. When GPT-4 was asked the question, how many R letters are in strawberry, it answered correctly. But when the reviewer asked GPT-5, it failed to answer for several minutes. So then the reviewer went back to the prompt of GPT-5 and asked to count the bees in blueberry. GPT-5 said 3. So it still can't count to some degree.
Interesting. It's so funny to hear about it failing on what seems like such a simple task.
Like, I knew that answer, so I'm smarter than artificial intelligence, at least with that one question about bees and a blueberry.
Well, and what's funny about the kind of things I've noticed that make... So, yes, ChatGPT, something like ChatGPT-5, which I've been playing around with now since it was released last week, you know, the responses certainly feel more humanistic than they had previously. They feel more grounded in, what feels like a more natural response, like a natural human response rather than previously it felt a little bit like overly flattering or overly agreeable or, you know, just lacking some of the nuance of interacting with real human beings. So ChatGPT, I think, is pulling a little further away from where it was closer to the uncanny valley before, where you could, it was just uneasy enough that it didn't seem human.
Yes.
And I think it's, you know, we're getting really close to it.
And in an accelerating way, too. I mean, we're getting there faster every day. But I will anecdotally say that I've had two experiences now of people using artificial intelligence and saying, coming back and saying, well, AI said I did a great job. I had a friend, a family member actually, who was like, tried to compare all of our family to characters in Disney cartoons. And they were pretty interesting, but her favorite part was that the AI told her it was really brilliant. I had a friend last week who tried to come up with a new political platform that could bridge the gap at partisanship and used AI to help with that. And when he got done with it, he said, you know, AI said I did a great job.
So I think I said it earlier, and please don't take any offense to this, but garbage in, garbage out. honestly, basically the engine is responding to the prompt. So you can and also I think I hit on this a little bit, where as you respond to it, it learns what responses you like and what responses you don't like. And it will lean more into the responses that you respond well to.
Because it wants you to keep
humans will as
yeah,
well.
It wants you to keep engaging with it, right? The whole idea is that you stay with it and you stay in that portal and you stay at that prompt and it compels you to stick around. It reminds me of when we started learning about how algorithms would be used by social media networks to try to keep us scrolling until we feel the doom.
Right. The ChatGPT isn't going to get annoyed by you. So of course it's going to tell you you're great. If all you've put in there is, you know, how you want it to see you.
Yes.
So honestly, it's in the beholder. And you have to be sensible about how you're using it. I think it can be a really powerful tool for people to use both in their personal and professional lives. I think that there's a lot of potential, but there's also a lot of pitfalls. It's a new tool, and people have no idea how to use it yet.
We're just beginning to learn, but at the same time, so is it. Beth D'Angelo has worked in IT for more than 20 years. She's here to answer your tech questions on our Tech Monday on the Larry Mueller Show. She's also the senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. So whether it's AI or other tech questions you have today, we welcome you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us, talk@WPR.org. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News. Stay with The Larry Mueller Show, because coming up after noon today, we meet the UW-Milwaukee civil engineering doctoral student whose company is creating smart stoplights that improve the flow of traffic. We'll find out how he's using AI to start his business. But first, we're talking about artificial intelligence with our guest, Beth D'Angelo, senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. OpenAI, a big artificial intelligence company, is valued at $300 to $500 billion with a B dollars, released their latest iteration of their chatbot, GPT-5, last week. And it is free, and you are invited to use it. It is free as of now. There are some paid models that can be used for those who are looking at something more complex. But we're taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. And let's go to Matt in Green Bay. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. Really interesting subject, and I've got a really interesting input on it.
Oh, do tell.
So I tried to write a song with ChatGPT. And I gave it parameters of what I wanted it to do. It engaged very deeply on it. It has a basic rundown of the song. Will have a fat organ and gut bucket piano group, bass, drums, skank, guitar, percussion. I mean, it went into the detail that I told it to you, right?
Okay.
Everything's awesome here. It's great. It says, give me a moment to build it. And this is where it gets really funny and kind of creepy. So it keeps coming back to me, give me a moment to build it. And then I said, what is your style? I've been through this about 9 times, and I'm kind of having fun with it. And I push back instantly with, what is your time scale for completion? Oh, it'll take a few minutes to run. And then it doesn't give it to me. I've gotten to the point where I've gotten to, what is your time scale for completion, liar? Because it's been lying to me for the last week. And what it came up with is, for the full synthetic demo MP3 I can produce here, the time scale is literally a few minutes from when I start generating, not hours or days. The problem earlier wasn't the processing time. It was me not actually starting to the generation while we kept discussing details. If I start right now, you'll have the download link in about 5 minutes. Do you want me to actually hit go this second so the clock starts?
Yes.
Yes.
And?
Once it's ready, I'll post it directly to your MP3 link right here for you. And I said, sure, I don't believe you. It says that. Fair. And all this back and forth, I can understand why you wouldn't believe me until you actually see a file link here. I said yes, because it asked you want me to do it now. Now I'm still waiting. And wow. This is going on for 5 days now. I'll stop there. You get the gist of how intricate
yes.
the psychology is in how it keeps you tied to it.
And yet you still don't have a song.
And yet I still don't have a song, but yet I'm still interacting with it like a employee or a fellow employee that's lagging on giving me an answer I need.
Yeah, after 5 days, Matt, I think you could have come up with one with an organ and a piano yourself.
I think he's holding out for a producer credit.
He wants credit. Beth, that goes to the heart of, and I thank you, Matt, for that story, because that sounds like you were dealing with a bad customer service on the other end of the line. Just wait one more minute, please. And yet it kept you there for 5 days, Beth. That's incredible.
It really is. And, you know, honestly, the rabbit hole does not have an end when it comes to ChatGPT. Like, it, you can dive down it and continue forever. There is no limit to how nuanced you could get in your detail of your prompt. So, it, you know, honestly, you'll get out of it what you put into it. And, you know, when it comes to running up against the limits of what it can actually generate,
yeah.
I know there are some limitations, especially within the free version of the output of file types. So it may be that, and I don't know why it wouldn't have actually mentioned this, because usually that's how they get you to buy a subscription
upgrade,
for
a
pro version of it, so that you can actually get those file outputs if you're trying to do more complex work like writing a song. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for something to be produced as an actual MP3 file that's fully, generated with instruments and vocals and lyrics and arrangement and all that, it may be that you need an advanced version of an AI engine that's specific to that type of content.
I would have thought
type of material.
Yeah, I would have thought ChatGPT would have done it before 5 days of engagement to try to upsell.
Right, you would think they would just say, "Hey, you know, we can't do this at this level, but if you pay us this much, we'll have it done in like 3 minutes."
Do we have any concept of how much resources are being poured into artificial intelligence processing machines and data centers? Do we get the idea yet of what this is going to cost us in terms of electricity and water?
Insane amounts of resources
okay.
is really the only way I can put it. It's kind of unfathomable. Fathomable the amount of electricity for powering the processors that are running these AI engines, and then also the cooling that it takes to manage the environments that those processors live in, the amount of water resources those use, the potential polluting impacts of the facilities that contain all of that processing power on the communities that are in close proximity to them. Really, I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg as far as studying the impacts right now and seeing any real impact analysis. But some of the early reports I've seen have been pretty staggering.
Well, some of the stories I've seen, at least on news sites, are that electrical costs seem to be going up, and part of that seems to be increased electrical usage for large data centers.
Absolutely. There's big money in building big data centers right now. They're popping up in kind of less populated parts of the country with, pretty increasing frequency right now. And I think, a lot of communities are just starting to feel the negative impact of being in close proximity to those data centers. And the fallout is I think just going to continue to get more and more visible to people.
Interesting. So that's something else we are going to have to at least address at some point. The other aspect of this I'm seeing with college graduation and the summertime and college graduates looking for jobs is a job market that seems to have been, to some degree, and maybe we don't understand this entirely yet either, jobs market that has been impacted by artificial intelligence. From an IT specialist perspective, where do you see AI encroaching on the jobs market, Beth?
From an IT perspective, within the type of market that, you know, my expertise is in, I think the adoption of AI in business and public sector and nonprofit organizations is going to increase the need for folks with technical expertise. I think both in understanding how to use AI as a tool to increase efficiency and accuracy and production within organizations, but also to understand the security implications of using those tools within, you know, commerce or business environments or, you know, healthcare organization environments, education, things like that. So I think within my field, it is going to increase the need for people with that type of technical expertise. So I think we're going to see that grow continuously. It has been growing pretty steadily in recent years. I think impact to other job markets, I think really depending on where within the range of job you are working within. I think some businesses may start relying on AI tools for certain things. They may have hired, you know, another small business to do for them. They may start trying to do in-house with the use of certain AI tools. Like if they hired a local ad agency to create, you know, graphics for them to post in a newspaper, they may turn to one of these tools to create that content themselves rather than hiring a local company that does that for small businesses. So I think adapting to AI as a new tool to use within whatever sector of the economy you work is a strategy that will help mitigate those risks of jobs being eliminated for people.
Beth D'Angelo joining us, IT specialist from UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, invites you to our conversation as well at 1-800-642-1234 for our Tech Update Monday. Your tech questions, 1-800-642-1234, or your AI experiences, you can also email talk@wpr.org. Beth, a story from last Wednesday when Chris Cuomo, a host on News Nation and formerly of CNN, went to Instagram to share a video of Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was arguing on the floor of Congress that a recent TV ad featuring blue jeans was racist. Now, the ad and or the actual speech by Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez was a deep fake. It was not real. And yet it was posted as real by a news anchor, Chris Cuomo, last Wednesday before deleting it after being called out for posting a deep fake. Now, if a news caster can't figure out the real from the fake, how are we supposed to do it?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think a fear a lot of folks have right now that they can't trust what their eyes are seeing or what their ears are hearing because some of the content that is being generated by AI is difficult, you know, to the eye or the ear to distinguish from, you know, organically generated content. But there are some tools out there that are helpful that, you know, folks aren't used to really looking at these things in fine detail to be able to differentiate between what is real and what isn't. There are a few software tools out there that you can use. GPT-0 is a really good one for, especially for written material to detect AI generated text. So let's say you're a person reviewing resumes for hiring for your company and you want to make sure that you're not reading with a fine tooth comb through the resumes of folks who are generating them using ChatGPT, you could use a tool like GPT-0 to scan those resumes to give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down on whether or not that was actually human-generated content.
Interesting.
So there are also some that something called CopyLeaks AI detector it gives you kind of like a probability score of whether or not an AI product was used to generate something. So there are tools out there to help you with identifying and with, you know, eliminating that as noise rather than something you should focus on.
So GPT-0 and the other one was CopyLeaks AI Detector?
Yeah, those are just a couple that I've looked into. There's also an OpenAI text classifier.
Okay.
That's a really good one for text-generated AI. So there are hidden characters within AI-generated text that you can't see. If you copy and paste directly out of an AI tool into another software like Microsoft Word,
mm-hmm.
And then you send that electronic file to someone, they can run that through a detector to find out whether or not those hidden characters exist within the text you sent to them. So,
Very interesting.
You're not sneaky.
No, you're not sneaky. I had no idea. The thing I had used for photos, Beth, is a Google image search to see where else it shows up on the internet. Because Google can search images the same way it can search text now. So taking a picture that you wonder about its source, you do a Google image search and see where else that's come up on the internet. And where it's been, where it originated from.
Yeah, absolutely. Reverse image searches are not just for AI generated content, but any kind of, you know, say you're on Facebook and you get an ad for a backpack that looks really cool and you like it and it's a really good price and you're like, this website looks sketchy. I'm not sure if they're the ones that are actually manufacturing this thing. They might be just knocking it off. Maybe I should do a Google image search for the picture that was in the ad that I got and see if this is on a whole bunch of other knockoff websites that are just selling a cheap version of what I actually want to buy.
Beth D'Angelo, our guest, and we go to you next with your tech questions. Stephen Oshkosh, good morning.
Hi. I heard Jeffrey Hinton, who is known as the godfather of AI, say that AI works very well with mediation, like conflict resolution type stuff.
Hmm.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. Have you seen, Beth, AI used for mediation yet?
I've seen it in the traditional sense of mediation, where you have an impartial third party hearing both sides of an argument and guiding the two interested parties towards a shared resolution or a negotiated resolution. But what I can say is it can be a really effective tool for checking your own responses within any kind of a conflict situation.
Huh.
Say you get an emotionally charged text message from a friend and it triggers an equally emotional response in you. And your first instinct is to fire back with, how dare you say that about me? I'm not that short, right? And then before you send the text, you pause for a second and you say, well, that's not really why I don't really want to lash out at this person, but I do want to let them know that, this is something that hurts my feelings. And I want to say it in a way that's, respectful and not going to trigger defensiveness. So how can I approach this with the most emotional maturity? And ChatGPT will give you a list of examples of how you can respond to that in a better way. So if you're struggling to contain your own emotions while you're, trying to resolve conflict, I think it's a useful tool for, not in the moment, obviously you're not going to
Right.
ask someone to, can you hang on a second while I check my my ChatGPT for how to respond to you in this conversation. But, in that kind of asynchronous chat space, if you're not sure how to approach something and you want to run it by an impartial third party, it's not a bad tool.
Yeah, it could be very effective for conflict
Right.
Mediate. I think it's a great question, Steve, and I have no doubt that it could be employed that way going forward. Beth, what scares you most about artificial intelligence? Do you think it could take over the world? Do you think it could eliminate humans? Or do you think there is something maybe a little less nefarious that people should keep an eye on?
Well, I, for one, welcome our new robot overlord.
You better say that.
Honestly. If they're recording this. So I think the thing that scares me most, honestly, about the technology is the people. I'm more afraid of how people are going to use it than I am afraid of the technology itself.
What do you mean by that?
So, you know, it's a tool. And any tool can be used for benefit or for malice. And I think people are lacking the curiosity to actually figure out how to use it for benefit, mm-hmm. and not use it for evil, I guess, in a more esoteric sense. So there's not a lot of regulation around it. It's very hard to regulate. It's accelerating in its expansion faster than any of our legislative bodies around the world can get in front of. They don't understand the technology or how it works. So we're leaving it up to the creators of these engines to regulate themselves and the industry to regulate itself, which is very scary. So I think in the absence of someone to tell us how to do it right, we need to educate ourselves on how to use it right and, you know, how to safeguard ourselves from the potential uses of it that could hurt us.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a more disconcerting answer than worried about AI taking over the world. It's worried about the people who are building our artificial intelligence models as we speak and what their intent is as people begin to employ it and use it. Is that fair? Yeah, that is a very interesting perspective that I had not thought of. And so what questions are you thinking of right now when it comes to artificial intelligence and technology? I want to invite you to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist for UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And when we'll continue here, we'll also take a look at the proposed approximately 100% tariff on chips and semiconductors that are brought into the United States and what that may mean for planning for new hardware or used hardware, or what you might want to be budgeting for in the next year or so when it comes to computers and electronics and your machines. We'll tackle that when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to WPR News. Good news, Larry Mueller returns tomorrow on WPR News, and he'll have a conversation about building real self-confidence. Also, an update on recovering from brain injuries, and we'll get a checkup on our hearing health all tomorrow from 11 to 1 with Larry Mueller on WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and our guest is Beth D'Angelo, IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, talking about artificial intelligence, how it's being used, how it may be used in the future, and how you'd like, what questions you'd have about seeing it used. At 1-800-642-1234 or talk@wpr.org. We'll go to David in Monona next. David, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have used ChatGPT for a number of things. I'm a former computer database person, retired. When you say that you can detect that ChatGPT has been used in the production of a document, I'm wondering about the proper use of it. You know, I write a letter. I'm concerned about how I say things, so I run it through the filter, and it comes back with some nice improvements, and I use them. Now, could the recipient, say a legal person or an official, be running the document through them and say, oh, ChatGPT did this. I'm going to disregard it.
Great question, David, and thanks for asking. Beth, what do you think? If you use AI to polish up your work and then put it in a document and somebody identifies it as AI, does it just get thrown out entirely?
Well, I think if there are organizations that are using those tools to detect whether or not the content has been generated by AI, I think that may introduce some bias into the process that they're using for actually reviewing what you're sending to them. I think it could potentially have some effect, you know, impact on whether or not folks are going to, read what you've sent or review what you've sent with the same, concern as they would something that they knew was 100% human generated. So just as there are tools that they use for detecting that there are those hidden characters within AI generated text, there are tools that you can plug that text into to remove those hidden characters and then be able to clean copy your content and clean paste them into wherever you're submitting your content. So really, it's just this like kind of game of cops and robbers, it feels like, where
right.
Just as there's a way to figure it out, then there's a new tool that like takes it away. And so the way I use it personally, if I'm using it to generate content that I then want to use as anything that I'm going to present as content that I've created for myself, I'm using it as a framework or an outline or a starting point or to produce a list of things I should be thinking about or considering, or I'm using it as part of my process to create.
There you go. And David,
so
I've had
it as a tool.
Yeah. And David, I've had a similar experience where I've had AI polish up what I've written. I think what they wrote is much better than what I said. So I'd copy and paste it in. But now that I've heard from Beth today, I think what I would do is retype the whole thing and use the language of the AI model. If I find it's an improvement, but I can just retype that instead of copying and pasting it. And that should keep away any sort of the hidden characters that I would identify it as AI employed.
Here's an even easier workaround. You take a screenshot of the AI generated text, and then you plug that screenshot into an optical character reader software program that then rewrites it for you without the characters it can't see.
So there are ways to get around it, David, but your question was my question, so I'm glad you asked it. Well, you mentioned security implications of AI, Beth. What are some of those?
Really where a lot of folks in my world are concerned is the security implications of AI. And from my standpoint is the security risks come in what you give the AI engine access to. So if we're just talking about an AI engine like ChatGPT, it's not something that you have integrated into a larger system that you use that contains secure data. So at home, if you're using a ChatGPT engine on your personal computer, as long as all of the secure data that you keep on that machine is kept in a secure space, like an encrypted hard drive or, on a web service that is behind a multi-factor authentication, all of that data is pretty safe. And you don't have any integration points between that ChatGPT engine and your secure data. However, when you start talking about at organizational scale, when organizations start adopting AI as part of their IT ecosystem, and they start integrating systems with that AI engine as data sources that AI engine can pull from, what is the security around that AI engine to keep that data secure? Because now it's not just we're looking at generating content from data that's pulled from the internet, which everyone can see, but we're looking at content that's generated from within your organization that could be secure or private or restricted data. So how is that data accessed? How is it secured? How are risks mitigated within those integration points from those ChatGPT engines?
Have we seen examples yet of AI outputting private or personal information that probably we'd attribute to hallucination and should not have been part of the answer or even their, part of their language model?
That's a really good question. I haven't heard of any, large public disclosures that have come from leaks or vulnerabilities within AI engines yet. However, the caveat around that is, at the organizational level, a lot of these software tools have only started to be integrated into, you know, what folks are already using, like a Microsoft suite of software, in the last 12 months.
Sure.
So
yet,
I think the big question.
I heard you stress it, and I'll just stress it again. Yet, but we're keeping an eye on it, and it's worth being careful with your personal information anywhere online, and at this point, certainly with AI. Last Wednesday in the Oval Office, President Trump said, quote, we'll be putting a tariff of approximately 100% on chips and semiconductors, but if you're building in the United States of America, there's no charge. Today in the New York Times, we learn that chip makers NVIDIA and AMD are expected to pay the U.S. 15% of the money they take in from selling artificial intelligence chips to China as part of what the New York Times calls a highly unusual financial agreement with the Trump administration. Now, we don't necessarily deal with tariffs or charges on microchips, but if we're thinking about buying electronics in the coming year or so, how do we take this information into account to budget?
Yeah, so certainly a high tariff on chipsets produced outside of the U.S. is going to raise prices considerably on consumer products that rely on those chipsets for production. So the problem I see here is I think that what's happening is the only real measure that the U.S. is ahead of mostly China on within the AI sphere is chipset production. And I think our government is economically trying to really dig their toes in on that foothold, because we are either surpassed or near surpassed in the evolution of AI technologies in every other category except chipset production. So I think this tariff is really kind of a hard line in the sand to force a lot of manufacturers to purchase U.S. Manufactured chips and to reduce the, you know, that China is starting to create a more level playing field in that part of the market. And that is the last stronghold that the U.S. still has.
Okay. Do we have enough domestically produced microchips to answer supply?
That is a good question. I think Intel is a big question right now. There's been a lot of, you know, controversy around what's been going on with Intel recently. And I think that's a lot of that is very politically motivated. I'm hoping that there will be some investment made in some maybe smaller manufacturers ramping up production to be able to produce at scale, to increase, you know, the ability of local manufacturing outside of some of these larger industry contenders who may be more impacted by some of the other global supply chain issues that are going on.
What do you see as a timeline for ramping up production domestically, Beth?
Unfortunately, that is a longer scale than we have, you know, before the real impact is going to hit. I think ramping up production, especially for smaller scale producers, is not something that can be done in the short term.
Yeah.
I think really this is going to be a difficult move for a lot of consumer electronic product manufacturers to navigate, especially anyone who's making anything in the U.S.
Which means it also could be difficult for consumers as well. Beth, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. You have changed the way I see artificial intelligence, so thank you.
Well, I'm so glad. I hope you also welcome our new robot overlord, Lee.
The jury is still out. Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. I thank her for joining us today, and thank you for participating in the conversation. Up next, after the news, we take a look at a new Wisconsin company that is looking to make traffic lights much, much smarter. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show.